Ladies and gentlemen, sports fans alike, welcome to another edition of Bill Swirsky's Sports Talk Chicago, one of the couple, two, three best podcasts around. So sit back, grab yourself a cold one and a Polish sausage, park your keister in the French room, and listen to Bill Swirsky's Sports Talk Chicago.
In Chicago, you know that all sports rock. The Bears, Hawks, Bulls, Cubs, and Sox. Pick your favorite, you can choose, as long as the Packers lose. For everything you need to know, it's Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago. Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago.
Hey everybody, welcome to another edition of Bill Swirsky Sports Talk Chicago. This is your hosts, Alex and Sean. On this episode, we are going to be talking about the new look Chicago Blackhawks. We're going to be talking spring training well underway. We're going to be talking some more Bears news. But first, I'd like to thank our sponsor, the Rockford IceHogs. If you're not familiar with the Rockford IceHogs, they're the AHL minor league affiliate of the Chicago Blackhawks. What does that mean for you? You get to see the stars of tomorrow today at family-friendly, affordable prices. The season is going on right now, and you should check them out, icehogs.com. Get yourself a hat, shirt, jersey, tickets, and more. Tell them Swirsky Sports sent you. Alex, how are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
I can't complain. Can't complain at all. So this week has been a... interesting one since the last time we recorded, and the Chicago Blackhawks do not look like the Chicago Blackhawks of last week.
No, they do not. And this right here, what we've seen with the many trades that have been made, obviously just the one is getting far and away the most attention, but Kyle Davidson made a lot of moves and he did kind of what we talked about before on this show. Just anything that's basically not bolted down, you're trading away. There's very few guys left. You traded away, in addition to Kane, which we'll obviously talk about, traded away Domi, Lafferty, among others. And I mean, now you are in absolute full tank mode, but you have stocked up on more draft picks. I think I read that over the next few years, they have 14 total draft picks in the first and second round. He is stocked up elbow deep in draft picks. And listen, the goal of this season was literally just ripping everything apart and starting from the very bottom. We could have said we were at rock bottom at the beginning. No, this is the bottom. This is the lowest point of the rebuild. This is everything that was here is gone, basically. I mean, it's like the start of the season was like clearing the land and digging the hole, and this for the foundation. And this is digging the hole for the foundation. This is as low as we are getting. I mean, wouldn't you agree with that assessment?
Absolutely. But, you know, we're not going to get any lower than this, but you can start to see glimpses of the light at the end of the tunnel at this point.
I think that a lot of what we're seeing with some of the prospects is very, very promising. And just the fact that we accumulated all this draft capital is very promising. So those are good things.
And you know, you said that stat with the 14 picks in the first two rounds of the next three drafts. It's absolutely correct. So in this year, they have two firsts and four seconds. Next year, two firsts, two seconds. And the year after, two firsts and two seconds. And on top of that, is one of these seconds could turn into a first. And if you add in third round picks, they have three of those as well. So then it's 17 picks in the first three rounds of the next three drafts. So,
right.
Yeah, there's a lot of draft capital, and not just draft capital, but draft capital stockpiled for multiple years.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, this is one of two things can happen. One, you have waves of players, so not everybody is coming due with contracts at the same time, and you have guys coming up in waves. And two is if you start hitting on guys, you can use some of those picks as trades trade bait to bring players in that you you're trying to, you know, whenever you draft players, the time it takes to develop guys and the low hit rate, you can draft all you want to try to complete a team. But at some point you're going to have to fill it in with either trades or free agency. And you now have ammunition to make trades.
Right. And that's going to be important too, as we go forward. And also we have to make it very, very clear to ourselves. And I think most of us have that. You mentioned seeing the light at the end of the tunnel, and I see it too, but that's a long tunnel. This is a long tunnel that we have to get through.
Oh, absolutely. I'm not saying we're near it. I'm just saying is we've hit that rock bottom. We know where due north is now. And we're going to be sitting at rock bottom until the draft, or till at least the draft lottery drawing. And then from there, you can start to see how it's going to go, you know. Knock on wood. Oh man, there's literally no wood by me. Knock on fake wood. We get Connor Bedard or get the number one pick. Suddenly you're like, oh boy, now I really see the light starting to get brighter, because you're like, we've got a guy who we expect to make the team next year and start contributing at the NHL level.
Well, and I mean, I think more than anything too, that's your building block.
Yeah. And all of the other young players that you have start fitting around that player.
Exactly. Because you have guys like Nizar and Reichel, you have some intriguing prospects, but he would be the centerpiece, the guy you build everything around. Heck, even if you land some of the top picks, it's a very, very good draft class. So the timing of this is very, very good that the Blackhawks are doing, because the draft is so stacked with talent. Even if you don't get the number one pick, you can still have the ability and the chances to draft one of those players that could be a centerpiece. I mean, that I think is one of the biggest steps in any rebuild, is having that guy to build around. You know, when the Cubs did it, it was Anthony Rizzo. What the Bears are trying to do, it's Justin Fields. And now if you can get somebody, and preferably Connor Bedard, there's your guy to build around. That's your centerpiece right there.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, when you have that one cog that is a centerpiece, it makes all of the other players around him look shinier and better. And, you know, Reichel and Nizar, some of these Blackhawks young players, they're nice players, until you have though that one guy, the picture doesn't look as pretty as far as their whole prospect pool, until you add that one centerpiece talent, that one number one guy.
Exactly. And I think that going forward with this season, you know, last week we were kind of worried that they were going to win more, because they were on a little bit of a hot streak there before the deadline. They were winning some games, and some of those wins were against some solid opponents. So they weren't just beating bottom feeders, but more than anything, you need to lose to the bottom feeders, because they're competing for the same chances that we are. But, you know, you've started to lose some games again. And I mean, Kyle Davidson, he's done everything he could to just completely tank this. I mean, he was able to get something for Max Domi, which I think is pretty impressive. Domi was having a really nice season too. He had, what, 18 goals when he was traded away? I think I saw a stat. He had like one less goal and one less point than Alex DeBrincat. I mean, yes. He was having a nice year.
So, The trades that they made, and we can go through each one and kind of some of them, I don't want to say grade, but give our thoughts. So sure. So there's one, we gave future considerations to the Kings for Austin Wagner. And Austin Wagner is a guy that's just going to fill out the roster at the NHL level. for the rest of the season.
Yeah, he's a warm body. And I mean, they made that move because they were going to trade other guys and you needed somebody.
Yep. So I don't really think that needs a grade at all, because it's literally filling out a roster. And you had the Max Domi and Dylan Wells to Dallas for a 2025 second round pick, and a player. And the player is a guy that's going to help the Rockford Ice Hogs, which, you know, it's neat. You start to see that some of the guys that they picked up, they are AHL players, and they got them to bolster the Ice Hogs because they want some of these young players to play on a good Ice Hogs team so they can play in the playoffs and get some playoff experience. And I'm like, that's actually pretty brilliant.
It is smart. Yeah. I liked that thinking with some of this.
Yeah. So some of these players they're just AHL guys, and they're just there to bolster the Ice Hogs.
Wow. Max Domi was our points leader.
Yeah, there you go. And honestly, I'm going to throw this out there, is I would say there's a better than 50-50 shot that Max Domi signs with the Blackhawks next season.
I just said that. I was just saying that the second he was traded, I say, great, you got something for him, bring him back next year.
He's been kind of a nomad the last several years. And I have a feeling that, I mean, he said it publicly, he really liked it here, he felt at home. And I think I would be shocked if Davidson didn't go to him and be like, hey, listen, you know, we would like to bring you back. Consider this a couple month vacation in Dallas.
And, yeah, exactly. Exactly. And I think that the other nice thing too is, you know, you're going to need to fill out a roster next year and you're going to have to sign some guys, and it would just make the most sense in the world.
Yeah. I mean, is Max Domi a player on a top six player on a team that's going to win a Stanley Cup at this point? Probably not. But was he a nice player for a team that's rebuilding? Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's a likable guy. He played well. He fit in with this organization and the coaching staff. Yeah.
Got some physicality to it.
And he wasn't a high cost player.
Nope.
There's nothing about him that says to me, don't bring him back.
I'm with you.
Dylan Sakura to the Ducks, another minor league player. That was a purely let's make the Ice Hogs better move.
Yes.
Because Dylan Sakura wasn't having that great of a year, and they got but he has more upside. The other guy is a solid AHL player, and that's a boost for the Ice Hogs.
Mm-hmm.
You made another trade with future considerations for Anders Bjork. And he's another body for the NHL team for the rest of the season. This is one of my favorite moves is the Nikita Zaitsev, and you get a second and fourth rounder for nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So you weaponized your cap space.
Mm-hmm. That was with the Senators, wasn't it?
Yep, that was with the Senators. And the Senators needed to clear cap space in order to make some of these moves.
That was great.
And the Blackhawks obliged and got a second and fourth rounder out of it, which is pretty awesome.
That's pretty awesome, yeah. I had to blink twice when I saw that. I'm like, wow.
So that one I like is Zaitsev. He's a guy that could play well, and maybe given the opportunity with low pressure and more opportunity, he could make something of it. But even if he doesn't, he's helping you meet that salary floor, and he got you a second and a fourth to pick him up. So
the draft picks are the real value here.
Yeah. It's he is, you know, extra bonus. If he pans out, you go, awesome.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's what would you call it? A cherry on top or something like that.
Gravy. You have another AHL Ice Hogs move, Josiah Slavin into the Ducks for Hunter Drew.
Slavin.
All Slavin. You had Jack Johnson. And this was definitely had to have been a favor for Jack Johnson. Is you traded him to the Avalanche for Andreas Englund. You know, you got a player back that can play at the NHL level for you, but you gave him Jack Johnson an out. I think that's a goodwill move.
Yeah. Yeah.
You gave up Sam Lafferty and Jake McCabe and a pair of fifth round draft picks for a first, a second, and two players.
More than fine with that deal.
More than fine. And then the last trade you made was Patrick Kane to the Rangers for a conditional second round pick, a fourth round pick, and you got one player from the Rangers and one player from the Coyotes who facilitated financial stuff.
Yeah. And obviously we're going to get into the effects of that because, you know, this isn't trading Max Domi or some of those other guys that have only been here a few months. You know, this was trading your superstar face of the franchise for the past 16 years, a guy who was crucial into a dynasty. And I want to have this conversation with you in a minute, but I'll bring up a certain topic in a sec, but just quickly from a trade aspect. Yes, we know it looks underwhelming, but the Blackhawks got what they could for a team that had no leverage in this. Kane approved a trade to one spot, and the Rangers weren't willing to give up a lot for him. So it was either trade him for what the Rangers were willing to get, or you hang on to him until he reaches free agency on a team that is going absolutely nowhere, that is actively trying to lose. Frankly, I think the return for a team that didn't have much leverage, it's fine. It's fine. We talked about this last week on our show. Our expectations for a potential return for Kane were not nearly as high because of this situation. It's not like there were other teams bidding for Patrick Kane and Patrick Kane was willing to waive his no trade clause for those teams. It was trade him to the Rangers or nothing. And you had to get something. And people, you know, people don't want to see their favorite superstar go. And I understand it. I do understand it, but I'm perfectly fine with getting something for Kane in a completely tanking year that, you know, and here's the other thing too. This isn't the 2021 Cubs where things kind of just fell apart quickly and you were still kind of fresh off that era. Listen, the Blackhawks haven't, I don't really count the COVID year. That was complete bullcrap, but the Blackhawks really haven't won anything worthy playoff wise since they last won their cup in 2015. That was 7 years ago. They have not been a real cup contender since 2017. So the team's been in the rut for quite some time now, and it's not like this is just the disassembling of it, you know, a year or two after the fact. It's been bad for a while now. There was really no reason for Kane to be playing on a team that was trying to tank and lose. I'm fine with the Blackhawks going out and getting something for him. And then you can kind of get that off your back. The organization could be like, you know what? This has been obviously speculated for a while. We've been working at this for a while. There's got to be kind of a, I think they said this on the score, and I kind of agree with them. There's got to be kind of a sense of relief, like that it's over. Like we can finally just focusing on moving on. Does that all sound fair?
Absolutely sounds fair. And another thing is, regardless of if Patrick Kane is having a slightly down year, the fact remains that he makes your team too good to get that number one pick.
Yeah. And you saw him start to heat up and you were winning some games, which, you know, from just a pure fan perspective was fun to watch, but you got to, the eyes on the prize, you got to focus on what your ultimate goal is here. And you know, the Blackhawks clearly are not afraid. They're not afraid to tear this down. They're not afraid to do this. What they're doing is obviously very risky. Unfortunately, Stan Bowman kind of put you in this position. He set you back many years, but you know, I always wondered, at least for a good few months last year when Kyle Davidson took over, where we were kind of wondering where this was going. And I think I've said this on the show before, and I'll kind of reflect it again. I was wondering how the Blackhawks would think about going into a complete rebuild, knowing that when there are times like this in this city and in this country as a whole, when the hockey team, the local hockey team isn't good, they're not going to necessarily get the support that the bad NFL team is going to get or the bad NBA team is going to get. You know what I'm saying? Like, I was wondering how they were going to assess that risk from a business standpoint.
I mean, I think it's one of those things is that it's clearly when you're winning hockey games, it's by far and away the best thing for business. And in the best way to get to that sustained winning is just completely tear it down.
Sure.
And we're still seeing butts in the seats, surprisingly.
Well, and that's why I wanted to point out too, it's not like it's like it looked like in 2005 or 2006, I should say. 2005, they didn't play. But I mean, you remember those crowds in the early mid 2000s at the United Center?
Yeah.
The Wolves were outdrawing them. That's not what we're seeing.
Yeah, you're still seeing butts and seats, surprisingly. And when the draft lottery happens and they're able to bring in a player, one of the top players, then you have this new hope to hang your hat on, especially if it's one of those top couple of guys that could very well play in the NHL next year and not be sitting down in Rockford for a couple of years. If it's a guy that can come right in, at least the top two guys should be able to come right into the NHL. That's a renewed interest. So, you know, you won't see a lag in attendance at games. Sure, the television ratings are probably low, but those will pick up too as you start winning.
Oh, if you get Connor Bedard, people watch and people go, even if the team's not good, because let's be real. The team is not going to be good next year. We know that.
No, but we saw what, you know, what competitive hockey can look like with a bad team with this new coaching staff.
Sure.
So I think if you add some talent, are they going to be good? No. But are they going to be competitive? Are you going to actively try to lose?
They won't be. I don't think they'll be like bottom of the barrel again like this next year. Like, okay, this is best case scenario. You land Bedard, you add a few guys to kind of stabilize some positions. You see Lucas Reichel have a full season. You can play some decently fun hockey to watch, even if you're not going to be good.
Where I could see them is, all right, so right now they're sitting at with 20 games left in the season and they're at 47 points. I could see them being at this point 60, 62 points, which is still like, you know, you can sniff those last playoff spots, but you're not going to get one by any stretch. You know, maybe upper 50s in points. Which would put you in the draft picks around 10, like 9 to 12.
Yeah, I mean, which would be fine. I mean, my hope here is that we're not going to be doing this the Edmonton Oilers way in the 2010s, if you know what I mean.
Right.
Just year after year after year of being absolute last bottom of the barrel. But, you know, like you said, and like I've said on this show, I see a team that is well coached and goes out to compete. They lose because they just lack the talent. They just don't have the talent, especially now. I mean, you have just guys out there at this point. I mean, even yesterday, they played well again, despite losing the first part, you know, first period or so, they were playing Nashville pretty well. They were. And then, you know, they kind of came apart, but that's okay because that's what we're trying to do. But, you know, I definitely, definitely see a difference between this. Like, this year has been more watchable than the Jeremy Colleton stuff at the beginning of last year. That was unwatchable hockey, even though the team on paper was better last year. But that was unwatchable. How discombobulated that was. At least there is a good system here.
Right.
But, you know, going back to my point about what the outlook is going into next year, and kind of how the fan base is taking it, a lot of people were upset just to see their guy go. And again, it's understandable, but I think people deep down, and you know, everyone's going to have varying opinions. I don't speak for every Blackhawks fan, but I think a lot of people get it. I think they understand what they're trying to do. Even if, you know, some people are still upset and they have a right to be, it's fine. You know, and again, I don't speak for everyone, but listen, you're not going to salvage. You weren't going to salvage anything more in the Kane and Taze era. You weren't. That window has been closed for a good 5 years now.
Right.
Now the big question is, does Jonathan Toews ever play another game in a Blackhawks uniform?
I'm starting to really doubt it.
I don't think so.
I think we've seen the last of it. I wonder if this sounds really corny, and I don't know if they'd actually do it, but what if towards the end of the season, Toews says, you know what, I'm hanging it up, and like he plays like one more game or a few more games, and then he's done. I don't know. But right now, because like, again, it's like the 2 years ago when he was gone, there was so much, like, we know what's going on, but there's a lot of mystery shrouded within it. And I don't know, at this point, wouldn't it just be best to hang it up?
I would think so. I mean, you've had so many issues. You had spotty play even when you were fully healthy. Just what more do you have to accomplish? Just, you know, take care of your health. And I know you love the game. Just take care of your health.
Exactly. Exactly. Health, family comes first, and you're not going to be a Blackhawk when this team is good again. You know, it's not like we're further down in a rebuild and they can be a contender next year and Toews would want one more shot at glory. That's just, no matter what, by the time the Blackhawks are going to be good again, Toews is either going to be gone or retired. Like, that's just the fact of it. So I can't speak for him, and I'm sure it's much harder for me to understand as someone who hasn't been playing this game for 30 plus years now. I don't see why you couldn't just think, you know what, let's just time to call it quits. But again, I'm not him.
Yeah, I was at my mom's house today, and my stepdad has, like, in the basement, like, all these like sports pictures hung up. So it's like this framed picture of a bunch of football cards from the 85 Bears, and he's got like some Bull stuff, and he's got this Blackhawks print, and it has a bunch of players from the 2015 season. And I'm just looking, I'm like, retired due to injury, on long-term IR, possibly retiring due to injury, traded away, retired to injury. And it was just like, everybody's just gone.
Yeah, everybody. There's not a soul left.
Seabrook, Keith, hosts,
Crawford,
Taves, Jalmerson, Kane, Shaw,
Sharp.
Yeah,
Saad. It's on the Blues.
Yeah. So I'm like, Saad is like the only one. Saad and Kane are the only ones still playing.
Yeah. Yeah, because Kimmo Tiiminen obviously retired that year. Johnny Oduya's done. You know, he's part of the post-game show, but Scott Darling hasn't played in years. Brian Bickell hasn't played in years.
Oh, Bickell was on that poster too. And I was like, retired for medical reasons. Hossa retired for medical reasons. Crawford. Debatable whether he retired for medical reasons.
There's a lot of mystery shrouded in him.
Yeah. And Shaw retired medical reasons. Keith just hung it up. Like it just
Sharp just kind of hung it up.
Sharp just hung it up. You know, it was just so weird to look at. I was like, man, such an end to an era.
Yeah, and it was, you know, the day that Kane was traded, you know, it was something that we kind of knew was coming, and a lot of fans were prepared for it, but you kind of sat back and you realized like this guy has been here since 2007. Do you know what happened the night he made his debut? Like, do you remember it all watching it? Because I don't think a lot of people would.
I don't remember, to be honest with you.
You know what happened his debut? It was game two of the NLDS when Ted Lilly gave up the home run and slammed his glove on the ground. People were watching the Cubs in the playoffs. And meanwhile, the number one overall pick, this superstar from the London Knights, 18, 19-year-old Patrick Kane, was making his debut for the Blackhawks, and barely anybody in Chicago batted an eye. And then all of a sudden, the Blackhawks were on the map again. I mean, it really was revolutionary to the Chicago sports landscape, because my entire childhood, the Blackhawks were completely irrelevant. Completely irrelevant. You know, those days of the 90s when you had Chelios and Roenick and Belfour and, you know, Joe Murphy and all those guys, I was too young to really remember that stuff. And as good as the Hawks were in the 90s and, you know, as successful as they were, I mean, let's be real. When you think of the 90s, you think of the Bulls and Michael Jordan more than anything. And then the Blackhawks were dismantled. And then, you know, when my childhood came around, nobody talked about the Hawks. People talked about the Chicago Wolves because they were winning championships. And where I grew up, I grew up in Elmhurst, and that's not far from Rosemont. So people went to those games all the time where I'm from. People didn't care about the Blackhawks. No, they couldn't watch them on television. They weren't worth talking about. They were just completely irrelevant. And Patrick Kane was one of the reasons they were really revolutionized. And next thing I know, in high school and college, you see Blackhawks everywhere. Everyone's wearing the jerseys and the shirts. There are posters and flags flying in so many windows of houses and businesses. You see fake Stanley Cups that people make out of tin foil and garbage cans and cardboard. You see people with hockey sticks, and the kids are going and playing youth hockey more than ever. And it was amazing. I mean, would you have said, Sean, when you were a younger adult, that you would one day envision a Blackhawks dynasty where parades were drawing millions of people in downtown Chicago to celebrate championships? Would you have believed that?
No, but I did get a glimpse of it when I was high school age, and the Blackhawks were really good. You got a glimpse of people really liking the Blackhawks and it being
were they
popular,
as relevant
but
though?
No, not even close. Not even close. So I mean, it's not as stark of a difference as from your perspective, but you know, it's still like a living through the dark era. It is still like, you know, crazy to think that you can't walk around the city without seeing somebody wearing Blackhawks gear, or you know, every restaurant that has a tchotchke on the wall has a Blackhawks tchotchke on the wall.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy to see. And having been to the parades, like I remember the first one is a friend of mine lived in Palatine, and he's like, I lived in, you know, right off the L, and he stayed over at my house, and we took the train for the parade or for the rally. And we had no idea what to expect. And there were so many people. It was crazy. And it was a good crazy. And I remember it was so hot, and I wore a Blackhawks jersey, and I'm sweating, and I took the L straight to work afterwards, and I was stinky and sweaty because it was so hot, and I was just wearing the Blackhawks sweater at work, and it was such a crazy day, and I'm like, I never thought I would see this, and nobody expected that turnout. I mean, I think the city was expecting 200,000 people, mm-hmm. and over 2 million showed up.
Yeah. Yeah. For the Cubs World Series parade.
Yeah. When the Cubs won, I mean, nobody was expecting the sheer mass number of people that were at the Cubs rally. I think that was like one of the top 10 biggest
gatherings in human history.
Yes. And nobody was expecting, everybody knew there'd be a lot of people, but I think that volume was crazy too. But the Blackhawks, it was just, nobody was ready for that. And especially when you go and look at other big cities, like when Los Angeles won, their parade looked like there was like 500 people there. It was empty.
It was like the Elmhurst St. Patrick's Day parade.
Yeah. It's just like, yeah, it's like a small town parade. You're like, that was it. And the Blackhawks, just people showed up, and it was crazy, the energy, but it wasn't like mayhem, like,
right?
If you know, I'm sure the Eagles parade in Philadelphia was just mayhem.
Lubed the poles, for goodness sake, there.
It was good times. It was good camaraderie. Everybody was so happy and jovial, and it was so neat. I was, you know, it was one of the best days I've ever had. It was so much fun.
Yeah. And I still try to cherish the memory of me experiencing it. You know what I mean? Because look, I also cannot lie when I say I can't always look at that era the same way now, unfortunately. It, you know, there is a bit of a stain on it now. And it does suck to say, but I hold the memories of the joy I had and the people I experienced it with. And, you know, that was a big part of my life. Those runs were big parts of my life. You know, in college, I was a freshman during the 2013 season, the shortened season. They had the point streak, the 17 seconds. I bonded with so many of my new friends over that team. So many friendships were created because of that team, to the point where over summer break, people from college I knew that were in the area would come out to my house and we would watch the games during summer break. And like, I can never, ever like be more thankful to have something that I could really help bond with people, with new people. Cause you know, I remember going to college, I was nervous. Was I going to make a lot of friends? Was I going to be, you know, social and have the opportunity to be, to meet a lot of new people. And I did, I was very lucky to, and such a big part of that reason was because of that team.
Yeah, it was such a cool time.
And you reflect the career of Patrick Kane, and I'm going to bring this debate to the show. So 446 goals, 779 assists, 1,225 points. And that's just counting regular season, not all the playoff games that he played where he scored big goals in overtime, including the 2010 Cup winner, the 2013 Western Conference winner, and many, many others. But when you talk about the most accomplished athlete since Michael Jordan in the city of Chicago, it's got to be Patrick Kane, right?
Probably.
I mean, who else? I mean, sure, Taze gets some nod because of being the captain of the team. And, you know, he scored a bunch of clutch goals too. But, you know, let's be real, Kane is more talented.
Absolutely. You know, and but if you're talking about accomplished, you know, only the Bears only have one title in, you know, the last however many years.
That was right when Jordan was starting.
So, like, you know, we're talking accomplishments. Jordan obviously won. You could argue Pippen.
I'm talking since Jordan, since 1998. Jordan.
Okay, since 1998. Okay, then it would be nobody on the Bears.
No.
I
mean, he won multiple players. Championships.
Yeah, there's nobody. There's nobody that. I mean, his only competition would be players on his own team.
Right. Right.
Like Hosa and Taves and Keith. Maybe Keith?
I mean, maybe. Keith is up there, but I'd still put Kane over him.
But yeah, that's the mark right there. That's the mark.
Right.
I mean, I would say that Patrick Kane is the greatest Blackhawk of all time.
And that was the second question I was going to ask. Would you call him the greatest Hawk of all time? And I think you can.
I think it's pretty easy to say that.
If you factor in the championships and the playoff moments, I think that's what gives it to him. I mean, I'm pretty sure the points leader is still Stan Mikita, right? I think it's still technically Stan Mikita. I would put Stan Mikita second. I think just in terms of the accomplishments you put as a player, because I think in terms of personality and likability, you're not going to beat Stan Mikita, but, you know, just in terms of accomplishments on the ice, yes, I would put that there. And, you know, it's funny because Kane might be the most accomplished and like most skilled athlete that this city has had since Jordan, but I don't know if you would say he's the biggest, just because as big as the Hawks were, let's face it, they're still not the Bears or the Cubs or the Bulls scale big. I mean, there were other guys that were looking to kind of take that title. Could you imagine if Derrick Rose never got hurt and he won a championship?
Yeah.
Could you imagine if Brian Urlacher won a championship? You know, if he won a Super Bowl, because you can argue that Urlacher and Rose were bigger because of the sports they played. As, you know, and you look at Rose, he was the hometown kid, supposed to be the next superstar, the next great era of Bulls that we hadn't seen since MJ. You know, that would have been obviously big. And you know what? I mean, in 2016, honestly, the way we were going, I thought that like Chris Bryant and Anthony Rizzo were going to take that title. I think a lot of people did. But they ended up only winning the one, which was historic. It was the most historic sports accomplishment since Jordan in the city, but not the most accomplished in terms of those players and what they did in terms of winning titles.
Let's can you name the top 10 points leaders in Blackhawks history?
Kane. Are you looking for order or just name the 10?
Let's see both.
Shoot. Okay. One, Makita.
Mm-hmm.
Is two, Bobby Hall?
Nope.
Is it Kane?
Yep.
Okay. Three, Bobby Hall.
Right.
Four. Dennis Savard?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Five.
This one gets a little dicey after this point.
Is it like Steve Larmer or something?
Yep, Steve Larmer.
How is he not in the Hall of Fame?
I don't know.
It's ridiculous. Okay. Seven.
No, six. That was five.
Six. Okay, six. Chelios?
Nope.
Roenick?
Nope.
Don't tell me. Not Pierre Palat.
Nope.
Is it Taze?
Yep.
Okay, so
Jonathan Taves.
Taze, six. Seven. Would that be Jeremy Roenick?
Nope. Jeremy Roenick's not in the top 10.
He's not. Okay. Okay. Seven. Chelios?
Nope, he's not in the top 10 either.
Yeah, he's played a lot with Detroit and Montreal, and it's true. Let's see. Trying to think. I doubt he's in the top 10. I'm just going to ask, is Joe Murphy in the top 10? I don't think so.
Uh-uh.
No, okay.
You want me to give you the 7 through 10?
Give me a hint for 7.
He was drafted in 77.
Doug Wilson?
Yep.
All right. Eight.
His brother's on the list.
Doug Wilson's brother? Oh, the Silver Jet. Dennis Hall. Okay. Okay, number 9.
Well before my time. He played for Boston, Detroit, and the Blackhawks. And he died in 2008.
Not Bob Probert. He died in 2008.
Mm-hmm.
He died in 2008. It's not Keith Magnuson because that was 2003.
Yeah. You might not know this one. I didn't even know this guy's name. I mean, I did, but not anybody that's on my radar for normal conversation. Pitt Martin.
Okay. All right.
And then the last one is a name you should know. Or you do know. I know you know.
Was he a recent Hawk?
Yes.
Is it Dunks?
Yep. Dunks.
All right. Okay. Okay. I didn't think I did too bad.
No, did pretty good.
I'm proud I got the Steve Larmer one because he's incredibly underrated.
Very underrated.
Wow. Jeremy Roenick really isn't in the top 10, huh?
Nope.
I guess he also did play a decent number of games, not in a Hawks uniform. You know, I kept guessing Chelios, but I'm like, man, he played all those years in Detroit. He started with the Montreal Canadiens, and yeah.
But even though he played all those games elsewhere, Chris Chelios still leads the Blackhawks all-time penalty minutes.
Right on.
And followed closely behind Keith Magnuson.
Yeah. Yeah, Keith Magnuson. I remember when he died when I was a kid.
True story is, he was my aunt's favorite player. And when my aunt was at a game once, somebody was shit talking Keith Magnuson and she fist fought a grown man.
Love it.
Rest in peace, Aunt Betty. You could throw hands with the best of them.
She's chilling with Keith Magnuson up there now.
Probably. You had, with the Blackhawks trades, you had five regular contributors out, five new NHL players in, and then I believe five AHL players brought in. So Kane, Domi, McCabe, Lafferty, Johnson gone, replaced by Zaitsev, Andreas Englund, Joey Anderson, Bjork, and Austin Wagner.
There,
apparently the coaching staff had a meet and greet during skate because they didn't know anybody's names.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the leading goal scorer, two tied for the leading goal scorer on the team with 14 are Andres Athanasiou and Taylor Radish.
Yeah. So, yesterday, I don't know how it'll look going forward, but the lines yesterday were the top line were Reichel, Kurashev, and Anastasiou. Second line is Johnson, Cole Gutman, and Taylor Radish. The third line was Bjork, Dickinson, and Entwistle. And the fourth line was Tkachuk, Kara, and Anderson, with your defensive pairings is Jones and Jones, Tenorti, Murphy. Connor Murphy was somebody that I was expecting to get traded and didn't. And England Zaitsev. That is your Blackhawks.
Yeah, and you know what? Like, I almost went to the game. My dad and I almost went to the game yesterday, and after everyone was traded, we're like, we won't spend the money for parking, so we'll just skip it. But I think towards the end of the year, Blackhawks tickets, those last few games are probably going to be very, very cheap, I would imagine.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's no big deal because I just take the L, so it costs me $5 round trip. But I probably will go make a sign saying, go, guy I don't know.
Yay, go you.
Just go team. Just doesn't say Blackhawks, it's just team. Go you. Good job, guy.
Go you, guys. Woohoo.
But we've got 20 games left, and as it stands now, the Blackhawks are at the second worst record in hockey. And they're a point behind Columbus. So they're right there within striking distance of having that worst record. Columbus does have a point worse, and the Blackhawks have an extra game.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a thing, but you know, some key dates is you have no games left against Columbus, which sucks, but you have one game against Arizona, who is one of the five worst teams. And then you have two games against Vancouver, who is right now the sixth worst team. So you've got a few games left against these teams that if you lose, you can bolster yourself because they're the teams that are hot on your ass for that seeding.
Yeah, it's going to be a battle to suck. The suck bowl.
You want to talk a little football?
Sure.
So we've had over the last several days, the NFL Combine, which there's just been so many freak athletes. It's amazing to watch these guys. You're watching 300-pound men run sub 540s. It's insane. But two things that really popped out for me as far as it relates to the Bears is, one, you know, we've seen Alabama has been arguably the best football program in college football for the last 10 years, correct?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you've had Ohio State's and you had Georgia's and you've had a couple of other teams, schools that Clemson that were good, but Alabama has been the team for the last decade plus.
Sure. Yeah.
And Bryce Young has been absolutely phenomenal as a quarterback there. And the question was, there was absolutely no question about his ability to be a leader, his ability to make throws, his ability to be NFL ready. The question about him is, how big is he? Because they listed him at 6 foot at Alabama, and everybody's like, And so he comes to the combine. He's 5 foot 10 and 1/8. I saw a picture of him next to these other athletes, and he just looks so small. I think that's going to hurt his draft stock.
That's what people have been saying.
But CJ Stroud came in looking like a physical freak, and he threw, and he had a phenomenal throwing day. So you combine that guy had an absolutely great combine with great film from a top program. I think teams are suddenly going, you know, we thought we could wait on a quarterback. I think CJ Stroud is the guy people are going to try to get up to number one for. And I think at first I was worried that Bryce Young being small was going to hurt the Bears. I think CJ Stroud showing out is going to make teams want to just leapfrog everybody else to get him, because it's not a, well, I can get one or the other and I can be okay with it. I think now they're like, Bryce Young is risky because of his size, and CJ Stroud is a guy that shows he can be legit.
Yeah. I think that a lot of people took note of that this weekend. And I mean, I always kind of take some of the combine stuff with a grain of salt, but you know, they do have it for a reason. So I'm going to be curious to see how this plays out. I mean, obviously we know what the Bears are going to be trying to do, but it's going to affect on how they do it and who they do it with.
Yeah. You know, the combine, you know, there's people that just fall in love with players based on freakish athletic ability and spandex, but I try to use it to either to paint a more full picture of what I'm seeing on film. So like a guy like Bryce Young, there's nothing he can do at the combine that's going to make it's going to enhance his film. His film is fantastic. The only real question you have about him is, I mean, he's a good leader, he's a good locker room guy. He's won at a college level, played at the highest level. He hits every throw. He's just awesome. You're just like, how big is he? So at the combine, you're like, man, he's so small. I worry that he's not going to be able to physically play in the NFL long, because he weighed in at 205, but I swear he must have swallowed some, you know, lead bricks, because he didn't look it. He looked like 5'10", 175, 180. And I think that's too small to play quarterback at the NFL. The passing lanes are going to be tough to find. The taking a hit, he's just going to get clobbered. I do worry. You know, but the combine, you're like, you can use it to be like, hey, I saw this guy play mid-level, you know, schools. Is he fast enough? And then you're like, oh, he comes out there and he ran a 4.440. Yeah, fast enough. Okay. That bolsters what I'm seeing on film. So I think you have to use it in conjunction. But Stroud came out and physically big, strong, did great in his interviews from what I read. And when he threw, he was crisp and sharp and could make every throw. And he had the strongest arm at the combine. It's I think that really cemented home to a lot of teams. That's the guy. That's the guy we're trading up for.
Right.
So I really think that the market is going to heat up for the Bears. I was a little worried that, you know, I knew they would get a decent return for the number one pick, but I thought it would be, this year's first and a second or first round next year, if they drop back into the 9-10 area, or, you know, first and a second, if they drop down within the top four. I think teams are going to pony up a little more than that. Because I think you're going to have some teams that are starting to salivate. The Raiders are a team that literally doesn't have an NFL quarterback on their roster.
Nope.
It's sounding more and more like Carr is going to sign with the Saints. I think Aaron Rodgers either retires or goes back to Green Bay.
A game we play every off season.
I know, for a guy that hated Brett Favre, just turned into Brett Favre. Just waiting for him to text pictures of his wiener to people.
God.
So I think, you know, the Jets are probably, so you have, who knows what the Titans are going to do, because I'm hearing rumblings that they might move on from Tannehill. They might move on from Tannehill and be in the market. The Carolina Panthers desperately in the market for a quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
The Jets in the market for a quarterback, although they keep saying that they want a veteran. It sounds like Jimmy Garoppolo is going to be in play somewhere. But you have the Texans are desperate for a quarterback. Colts are desperate for a quarterback. Suddenly these teams that tried to give you the facade that they were, yeah, we're okay with our quarterback situation, suddenly are starting to salivate. And I think that's playing well for the Bears when they know in other years, you know, teams are like, I got the number one pick, I'm picking the number one pick. The Bears are pretty much saying, you know, we're trading it. And everybody knows that that number one spot is available, and they're going to start making offers. And Ryan Poles said as much, as that, you know, if the right deal is there, he would like to make the move before the free agency period opens.
Yeah. You're hearing more and more rumblings about that.
And honestly, I mean, if you think about it, if the smaller the trade down, so the less number of spots they have to move down to, I think the more likely you are to make that trade early. Because if you go from 1 to 2 and you trade with the Texans, then I would make that move right away, because you don't want to give the Texans an opportunity to get cold feet, because I think that's the move right there. If you could trade 2, you're still open for business for trading back. Or if not, you already got some extra picks and you could get pretty much any player you want, because they're not trading up for a defensive player. They're trading up for a quarterback. And then you can play that hand all the way through to draft day. But, you know, if you're trading down to 9 with Carolina, or I believe 11 with Tennessee, that you're probably, unless they're just blowing you away with an offer, you're probably going to try to play that one out a little more, because if you're going to go that far down, you want to optimize your return, because that's a major move.
Yeah, absolutely.
What else? I'm hearing a lot of rumblings about DeAndre Hopkins being traded, and Bears fans are salivating over him. And I'm going to be honest, like, DeAndre Hopkins has had a nice career. And 3 years ago, I would have been right there, you know, going, oh man, you need this guy. But he's 30 years old and he's coming off a PED suspension.
Yeah, it is a risk. Yes,
that's a risk. Unless you are not giving up much for him, I don't know if I make that move.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I would not say to making that move, but it is a risk. I mean, it is what it is. It is a risk. You feel like you have to get a veteran receiver, right, from somewhere, some that's more than like a 3 or a 4, like one that can at least be a 2, I would think. Because, I mean, the receiver class in this draft class isn't stacked.
There it is, top heavy. I mean, you've got the kid from TCU. You've got the kid from USC. You've got the Ohio State kid. Like, there's like 5 receivers that are pretty darn good. And then after that, it drops off fairly significantly. The problem is those 5 guys are, the earliest one is probably getting picked about 12th. So you're looking at 12 through 32. And the Bears don't have a pick in that range.
Right.
Now, if they magically could get the number 2 and the number 12 pick from 10 to Texans, then suddenly you go, all right, now we're in position because we could get the player we wanted and we could get a receiver. Takes you out of the running of a free agent or trading somebody. But other than that, I don't know if the Bears can get one of those top, those like the very good wide receivers. And you know, there's always going to be a wide receiver that ends up having a good career that popped up later. But the guys that are the best wide receivers that, you know, rank the highest, they're all first rounders. There's 5 of them. They're going to be first round.
Right.
If you can't get one of those guys, then I'm right there on board with you that you need to bring in another guy. And I don't know if he needs to be, I would say a 1 or a 2, because if you bring in a 1, that's optimal. But if not, you need to bring in a really solid, probably a slot guy, and to help bolster Claypool and Mooney to be a 3-headed monster.
Right. That would be nice.
Yeah. I mean, you've seen when those quarterbacks make that year 3 jump and significant jump, it's always been associated with bringing in a top flight receiver. I mean, Joe Burrow did it his second year, and they brought in Ja'Marr Chase. Josh Allen did it in his third year, and they brought in the guy from Minnesota. You saw Jalen Hurts do it this year because they brought in AJ Brown. Like, you see them bring in a legitimate weapon to maximize the output of the quarterback. And so the Bears need to do something to optimize a weapon for Justin Fields. And, you know, and there's a lot of problems with, you know, Justin Fields needs an offensive line to help him out. And, but you need to give him another weapon. And I don't know if that's going to be a Mike Gesicki at tight end, or they try to sign a free agent wide receiver, or they tried to go a trade route again and bring in a DeAndre Hopkins. Ryan Poles admitted that last year they, with the salary cap situation they were in, they had to go quantity over quality for free agents.
Right.
And they had to fill out a roster. And now we're at the point where they've got a roster. Now it's time to add talent, and they've got the money and the resources to do that. So you're going to see a different approach to bringing guys in. And I think that's weapons is a big priority.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, like you said, it was kind of like the Blackhawks situation. You were just trying to put warm bodies out there. And that's why he traded back a million times, is creating more picks in the lower rounds so you could kind of help do that. But now you have an opportunity to fill it with actual talent. So you don't want to, you know, it's going to be hard to rebuild an entire roster for this coming season, but at least you can go out and try to prioritize making all the areas better. Talking, getting more at wide receiver, getting more at offensive line, and getting more on the front seven, because you desperately need someone that could put pressure on the quarterback. I mean, we talk about the edge rushers and the edge rushing that the Bears need. And I mean, that's why it's, you know, justifiable to want to go front seven first when you know you need to get weapons for Justin Fields because you're so deprived of that. But ideally, you want to improve in every area that you need to.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, if I'm the Bears and you feel that you can either patch both areas or completely fix one area and leave the other one in trouble, I almost would rather do that. Like, because quarterback's the most important position. I as much as the defense needs help, you know, I'm more of the mind, give him an offensive line, give him a weapon, and then whatever resources you have left over, then you can put it towards defense. But I think you have to maximize the ability for your quarterback to shine, because if he is not going to be the guy, if he is not going to take that step, then you're in trouble. And at least that way, if the quarterback becomes a bust and you put all the tools around him, then you know what? You get a top draft pick next year, and then you use it on another quarterback. I don't think that's going to happen, but you know, you have to set yourself up in the best way possible for the franchise.
Yeah, exactly.
We did have an incident with Jalen Carter, who was a guy that a lot of people said was the best player in this draft. And a lot of people have mocked to the Bears based on team needs and the position he plays. And comes to find out during the combine, Jalen Carter has two misdemeanor arrest warrants out for him, associated with drunken drag racing with a teammate who died in a wreck.
Yeah.
And that's tough, because, you know, you start weighing those options. You're like, okay, they're misdemeanors, you know, it's, but somebody died. Makes it way more serious than the issue alone. He lied about the situation, which is a red flag. And you know, you keep going back and forth, and it's kind of scary to draft that high when you're the Bears, because it's sure you have the best pick of players, but if you don't hit on that player, it really does set you back. If you miss on a first rounder and you're picking 29th or 30th, okay, you know, it sucks, but it doesn't kill you. When you miss with a top five pick, that really sets you back. And You know, Jalen Carter, you're like, man, he has the ability to absolutely dominate. I mean, he has the ability to be Warren Sapp. And if, and honestly, he has the ability to be Warren Sapp, which is an incredible Hall of Fame level player. But, you know, if he doesn't play every down, I see him more as an Ndamukong Suh, who was a pretty darn good player. But, you know, had some issues. He scares me a little bit. You know, you want a guy that you can count on that's going to be awesome. And, and so if he pans out, you're like, dodge that bullet. That's awesome. But if he doesn't pan out, man, that really does hurt you as a franchise.
Yeah, it does. It's like the risk is worse than the reward at this point.
That's my concern. And the scary part about drafting, you know, this high is he's one of those players that, you know, you're like, talent wise, he deserves to be here.
He was on a lot of people's radars for this team.
Yeah. I mean, he's been on a lot of people's either number one or number two player, regardless of position, on those, you know, best player lists, and one or two, either him or Will Anderson. And, you know, to have him be available, you're like, now you're like, do I pull the trigger? Do I take that risk? And, you know, at some point a team's going to go, oh yeah, well worth the risk. And I don't know what that point is. And, you know, is he going to slip? I mean, he might still go high. You know, he might fall into like a number 10. You know, I honestly could see the Lions taking him at 6 if he's still there.
Sure.
It's no matter what happens, I'm not shocked by any of it.
Right. Exactly.
I saw an interview with Ryan Poles, and he was talking about that he puts players in buckets. Then there's the blue buckets. Those are like the blue chip players and how they need more of those guys. And, you know, there's like what, red, orange, gray chips or buckets. And he puts the players in these buckets, and that's, and, you know, it's interesting to see that, you know, hear him talk like that, because, you know, obviously you need top end players to raise the whole level of your offense or defense. But, you know, it's interesting hearing him talk about it, because, you know, when you make these trades out of the top overall pick, you know, with that number one pick, you're guaranteeing you're going to get a guy that you consider in the blue bucket, you know, one of the blue chip players. Regardless of, you know, where you rank guys, you have your pick of the litter. And as you move further down, you know, how many players do you put as in your blue bucket? Is there 5? Is there 10? And if you trade down, the further you trade down, the higher the risk is of you not getting one of those blue chip players. And I think that's really, you know, you could hear in his voice kind of trying to discuss that tightrope, because you need to have blue chip players, but you really need to make sure you're trading that pick to optimize the draft capital that you get. And I think there's a real fine line that he's going to have to walk in order to maximize your number of blue chip players while also maximizing the value of that number one overall pick.
Exactly. Yep.
What else do I have for the Bears? We're getting really close to some of these important dates. The tag deadlines this week. So by the time you listen to this, the tag deadline may have happened already. And that's going to be interesting because we'll know at that point who's actually going to hit free agency. But free agency is right around the corner. We are like a week and a half from free agency or the legal tampering period. So that legal tampering period starts on March 13th.
Mm-hmm.
So we're a little over a week away, and it goes through March 15th. So I don't even know what today is. It's amazing. So today is March 5th. So, you know, by the time you listen to this episode, we're going to be 1 week away from the legal tampering period of free agency opening. And that's that point where you just see the giant contracts come flying off the boards, because football is a lot different than baseball, because those big name players, they don't wait. They go right off the board.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's always going to be, we look at it happen and everyone says they're overpaid, but you know what? That's what happens.
I mean, that's what it is. Are you overpaid
for free agents?
There's 32 employers. If you're overpaid, then that's the market being reset.
Right. I mean, every year you have to overpay for free agents. It's nothing new.
I mean, you know, I like the approach that Ryan Poles expresses, where his favorite part is that like second and third wave of free agencies, where, because you start to find value because teams have spent all their money on the top flight free agents, and then you can selectively pick up guys that are cheaper contracts. And we saw in previous regimes the Bears do well in some of those, like bringing over Akeem Hicks was a home run on a on a move that we thought would be a single with a hard round and look at second, or or a double, and you weren't expecting it to be the home run that it was.
No, I certainly wasn't.
And so I think that's really where you want to make moves, but you know, you have the money and you have the needs. I think you're going to see the Bears make some splashes, and I think they have to. I think that's
no, there's no question. You're so deprived of talent. You need to get it from every corner, and you have all the resources to get it.
Right. There's, you know, in future years, once you've sort of established that you're a good team, you know, you don't want to be the splashy team in that first day of free agency. But, you know, when you're building the talent around you, you sort of have to. You're stuck. You can't just, you know, you can't make this rebuild take 3 or 4 years. You've got to jumpstart it at some point.
Absolutely. I mean, especially in football, you have to really get things going as quick as you can, because listen, Justin Fields is on what, the last year of his rookie deal, right?
No, he's going to be year
or two more.
He's got two more.
Two more. But that's going to come up quick.
Yep.
It comes up quick. You need to know what you have.
I agree.
Because if he is truly the guy, you're going to have to pay him sooner than later.
But free agents that I, you know, I'll talk more about it next week when we're on the eve. But the names that I seriously think the Bears will be in the running for are Javon Hargrave, the defensive lineman from the Eagles. I think he's got a big one. Maybe Jacoby Myers, the wide receiver out of New England. He's a possibility. I don't think they're going to be all in on Orlando Brown. Daron Payne, absolutely, but I think he's going to get franchise tagged. Mike McClinchy, the right tackle from the 49ers, I think he's probably, I would put a 65-70% chance that he's one of the Bears' targets. Those are some of the guys, the big names I expect the Bears to potentially bring in. Maybe a Draymond Jones. Maybe possibly a Mike Gesicki. Those are some of the guys that I think that the Bears are big ticket items that the Bears could be working on.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, obviously we'll know a bit more by the time some of these deadlines hit, because, you know, teams are going to have to make some big decisions. And we've talked about this on our show before, and I want to kind of talk about it, not in depth again, because I think we've made our points clear, but I just wanted to bring up this little note. I don't know how reliable these sources are, but I'm sure you've seen it too, the more and more rumblings that Khalil Mack is probably going to be a cap casualty for the Chargers.
I think that's probably a good op. I mean, if he's either going to have to take a pay cut, which I don't see him doing, or signing as a, or being released as a cap casualty, I think that's probably the more likely option. But why in the world would he come back to the Bears when he could go as a situational pass rusher for a contending team?
Right.
But I think that's accurate that he's going to be cut as a cap casualty.
Right. I'm not saying it's likely. I'm just throwing it out there.
I mean, don't get me wrong, as a rebuilding team, knowing that the Chargers are on the hook for most of his salary, if you're the Bears and you could bring him in for, you know, a reasonable salary, I would love to have Khalil Mack back. That would be fantastic. It solves some of the problems that you have. And you know, you've got easily the best pass rusher on your team right there. And damn, if you got Will Anderson on the other side, Will Anderson and Khalil Mack, that's a heck of a combo there. Even if Khalil Mack is on the downside of his career.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, if it was a hypothetical perfect world, you sign him to a 1-2 year deal just to be that veteran presence and somebody that could still get to the quarterback. I mean, the main reason for getting rid of Khalil Mack was because he was older and making a lot of money. If you were to bring him back on a short-term deal and not so much money, then it would be a different story. But again, like, to the points that you made, I don't see him coming back to the Bears, but, you know, I think that it's very possible that he will be out there, considering that the Chargers do need to free up some space.
Yeah. I think there's probably other teams that are closer to a title that are more likely to be attractive for a Khalil Mack. But who knows? Maybe he's like, I spent years in Chicago. I liked it there. And who knows? But I think he will be a cap casualty. And the Bears are a team that has significant cap space to be able to, you know, bring him aboard. You know, it won't be the deal like he had, but it's they do have the room to pay him, and he would easily be the best pass rusher on this team.
Yeah, by far right now. But boy, the other thing you really hope for in addition to adding more talent, is hoping that Dominic Robinson can take a step forward last year, because we saw early signs of promise in that first game against San Francisco, and then it kind of dropped off a bit. So that would also be nice to see, just as a side note.
Yeah, I just don't know if he's ever going to be the guy. He might be a guy that's a, you know, rotational piece.
Right.
But
sure,
he's got to take another step forward. You know, I would not count on him at all. I would, if you have your way, you add two edge rushers, and if he plays well, that's a good problem to have, because then you wind up like the Eagles, where you have rotating pass rushers, and you can just keep coming at the quarterback in waves. And if he doesn't, then you still got two guys that can get after the quarterback.
Right.
Because
what, our leading guy in sacks last year was Brisker, wasn't it?
A rookie safety.
Yeah, a rookie safety
was your leading sack man. So that's not how things are supposed to be. Should we wrap this up talking a little baseball?
Sure.
I have nothing to say about the Bulls.
Yeah. If you saw that loss today against the Pacers, my goodness.
Yeah.
But yeah, I got nothing else.
I mean, if you're a Cubs fan, things look nice. You know, Nico Horner looking good. Your pitching staff pitching well.
Through a no-hitter Friday night.
Yeah.
There's some really nasty looking stuff. Really nasty looking stuff from some of those pitchers.
Absolutely.
And Justin Steele got his first bit of action this spring that night. So that was good to see. And then the next day I know they weren't facing a lot of good hitters on the Angels, and it is spring training, but they recorded a shutout the next day too against the Angels. Jameson Taillon looked solid.
Right.
His breaking ball is looking pretty, pretty nice.
You saw Brennan Davis, get a nice hit.
Hey, that rally they had against the Colorado Rockies was kind of jump-started by PCA and Davis today.
Yep. So you're seeing, Mancini swinging the bat well.
Yep, hit a home run today.
It's starting to get exciting. It's like baseball is here. And you like some of the direction that the Cubs are going.
Yeah, I mean, it's nice to see them play some fundamental baseball too. You know, the defense has looked good. They've made the plays. You're seeing the team kind of just look solid as a whole. And I know it's spring training, and there's obviously still concerns. There's obviously still areas of weakness, but they're playing well focused in spring. They seem motivated. They seem to like being there. So, we'll see how it translates into the regular season. And I wonder if David Bodie's going to play himself onto the roster, because he has been absolutely hitting the crap out of the baseball so far.
I mean, if David Bodie swings a bat hot like that through spring training, you try to move him, right?
Maybe. I mean, you could try. And dare I say too, you look at some of his competition, you do have to evaluate that too with some of the infielders.
True.
Because I think Morel, you're hearing rumblings, and it might make sense that he's going to start in AAA this year.
What was
and
that?
And I think
sorry.
That's a Morel.
Oh, okay.
Morel, yeah. Starting in AAA. Seems like that's a possibility.
That's a possibility. I mean, what gives him a better shot is We still don't know the extent of, say, a Suzuki's injury.
That's the biggest dark cloud over this right now.
Yeah. But I mean, that's if he's going to be, you know, out for a while, that probably looks like a better opportunity for Christopher Morel.
The problem is, though, is that the holes in the swing are really, really sticking out. And they have been for a while now.
Yeah.
I just wonder if going to AAA, having consistent time in one spot just to work on it might be the best for him. Because I think if Suzuki's out, you're going to see a decent number of Nelson Velasquez out there. Possibly. Maybe you put Trey Mancini out there too for a little bit. Because there's a few things going on. And, you know, it's been a few weeks of spring training, so it's hard to draw a million conclusions. But, I mean, is Eric Hosmer really going to be around here long? I don't know. They've been working Mervis a lot into these games. So maybe he's closer than we think. And I don't know. Eric Hosmer is just pounding everything on the ground, which is one of our big worries. And I don't know if he's going to be here very long. You know, you'll have Trey Mancini. So whether or not you have Hosmer or Mervis for when you do, you know, Mancini would be your number one first baseman. But if you have either Hosmer or Mervis playing first base, then Mancini could go into the outfield.
Yeah. David Ross pitched these three names as replacements for Suzuki. Potentially is Patrick Wisdom, Trey Mancini, and Mike Tauchman.
So I wonder if, too, that, I mean, I guess it could make sense, too, to start Velasquez in the minors because he's got a few things to work on, or he could play out. But Tauchman's been swinging a decent bat in spring. I'll give him that. I really don't like the idea of Patrick Wisdom being in right field.
I agree. I mean, it's
that left would field, not sure. Be... Right field.
I mean, here's the thing. All right. Let's just hypothetically say you put him in right field.
Okay.
I don't like it. Then who's playing third base?
It might be Nick Madrigal. You know what? His throws from third to first, they don't look right, but they work. Like, he's been holding his own so far, and he's been hitting. I don't want to overreact to it, but I mean, so far, Nick Madrigal has played like a guy who's trying to earn a spot.
You know, it's easier to make a decision on him if he's not hitting, because he's not a good enough fielder to keep on this team for his fielding ability. And
and
he's not an on-base enough guy to keep it running. He makes contact and gets hits. If he's not doing that, he's worthless on your team. And you kind of, you know, in some ways you're like, well, I hope he doesn't hit because it makes the decision easy. But when he moves positions and he's to make himself, you know, a better option and, you know, more versatile option, and he starts hitting, you know, he really puts you in a pickle. They're like, man, do we have to put him on the final 26 man roster? And I mean, he has options to go down to the minors, but you know, does he play himself onto this team?
I mean, so far, I think he's made a case. Bodhi and Madrigal have made their cases.
You know, those are two guys I was not expecting to make the roster, and both said, fuck it, we're going to make this roster.
Yeah, and because I think they might just part the options left, but McKinstry's main value in the majors has been versatility, but in terms of hitting, he's been very Crush Davis like, where he's really good in the minors, but just hasn't really hit much at the MLB level. So my whole thing with that is, like, don't put just versatility for the sake of having a versatile player if he can't hit major league pitching. You know what I'm saying? I mean,
that was fine last year.
Last year, it didn't matter.
Yeah. And last year, you're like, okay, we just want to have some warm bodies there. I got it.
And you were seeing if he had anything.
Yeah. This year is different. And, you know, you need to actually have somebody that's going to hit a baseball.
Exactly. That's the thing. And I really try to find that balance between taking some notes on how players perform in spring while also not trying to go too overboard with it. Because we see guys, every team, every year, have an unbelievable spring and then a subpar regular season. Or you have guys that are normally good all-star caliber players, but they hit like 200 in spring training. You know, obviously some guys have more of a motivation to play harder in spring than others. Like, you know, Nick Madrigal, David Bodie, they're trying to make this roster. You know, Dansby Swanson knows he's going to be on the roster. Nico Horner knows he's going to be on the roster. Ian Happ knows he's going to be on the roster. It's guys like those fringe guys that you try to watch the most. And, you know, going into the season, we had a lot of figuring out to put what guy where, we think, but we had a pretty good idea of who was going to be on that 26-man roster come opening day. Now things have changed a little bit, just because, mainly because of the Suzuki injury, that opens up a number of things.
Right. You know, we're inching closer and closer to start of opening day. And, you know, it's been fun having baseball back. It's going to be nice, though, once he sort of pare this team down and send guys that obviously are going to be in the minors or down and these state games are starting to be for real. Like, you know, Mancini's not going to hit 500 for the whole season.
Right.
But, you know, and you're not going to have you know, Dansby Swanson hitting 150 or whatever he's hitting. You're going to see more, you know, of the numbers that you're projecting for them come about. So it's going to be nice once you see this team in real meaningful games and not just spring training. I'm loving spring training and I'm loving some of the things I'm seeing, but, you know, actually real games that count.
Yeah, absolutely.
On the south side, you know, you're seeing some guys swinging the bat well. But man, Pedro Grifol is still batting Lurie Garcia. And I don't know what the heck Lurie Garcia did to warrant him keep getting at bats. Every other sane team would have DFA'd him a long time ago.
Could this just be because some of those guys are on the WBC right now, like Mankata and Robert? Like, they just need somebody to take those at-bats?
Maybe. But I just, at some point, don't you just go, goddamn, Lurie Garcia is not a good baseball player.
Well, I mean, if this was last year, you would just say the theory is that he's got pictures of Tony somewhere, or that this year, maybe Tony is using his mind powers to take over Pedro Grifol for the sole reason of putting Lurie Garcia in there. But, you know, I feel like at this point, you know, they got some guys on the WBC. So I don't know. We'll see what happens regular season. I don't see him being anything more than a pinch hitter platoon guy come regular season after you made the Elvis Andrus move, as long as they're fully healthy, that is. I think some of the big questions I have for the White Sox are, you know, is Jake Berger going to be part of your plans this year? I think that's one of the things that I would like to see how they handle. How are you going to handle Gavin Sheets this year? I think Oscar Colas has been hitting really well and he's been impressing the masses. So I feel confident that he's going to be part of the team.
maybe it wasn't the manager, Tony La Russa, that Larry Garcia had photos of. Maybe it's Jerry Reinsdorf, and he has the PP tape. He's got the Jerry Reinsdorf PP tape, and they're like,
you have put just absolute horrific images in my mind.
You're gonna have nightmares. PP tape, Reinsdorf. No, don't put it on.
It's literally like a VHS, and
it's a blank VHS tape. It's got like the Kodak sticker on there, yeah. And somebody's handwriting on there. It says PP tape.
And every time Lurie is in the lineup, he looks up to the owner's box and he just holds up the tape like in his hand, and then
he's tapping on it.
Tap, tap, tap. Well, until it stops, we have to think of all theories, right? I mean, well, like I said, regular season, I think, will be a little bit different. But if I saw this correctly, I believe Eloy has played a little bit of right field this spring.
He has.
I still don't like that, but hopefully he doesn't have to do it often.
Eloy is swinging the bat well.
I think that offense is going to match this year. I think they're going to do a real good, as long as they're healthy. I think that they're going to be one of the top offenses in baseball. I really do. Even if the lower end is a little weaker, you got Anderson, Benintendi, Eloy, Robert, and if Moncada bounces back, that's going to be a damn good offense. You got to stay healthy. And don't forget Andrew Vaughn, too. I think Andrew Vaughn playing in his natural spot is going to help him. Playing outfield, he was lost out there. And that, you know, puts your mind in different places. I think just focusing on his natural position can help him focus better as a hitter. That's just my opinion. I don't know how much playing the outfield affected him for himself, but my theory thinking is that playing his natural position is going to help him a bit.
Yeah. You know, the guy that they sort of moved on from to give him playing opportunity, Jose Abreu, is suddenly becoming very vocal as of late. And he's become the White Sox Wilson Contreras, going to a rival and just being pissed off about being let go from his former team. And it's a weird thing. Is Jose Abreu has been a quiet leader for the White Sox, and when he moved on, became very vocal. It was a different side of Jose Abreu than I think a lot of us have seen before.
Yeah, I don't think we've ever heard him as vocal before. Like, because, you know, he's been with the White Sox for, what, it was 2014 to last year. So he was there a good number of years. And he wasn't always speaking his mind or saying a lot. And, you know, now he is being open. And, you know, unfortunately, we can't really say that a lot of us are surprised that the clubhouse wasn't great last year. You know, right. I really, really think Tony La Russa killed so many of those vibes.
I totally agree. We said that when he was hired, it was a terrible choice.
And which is why I feel better that the Sox are going to be legit contenders this year, because I feel like Pedro Grifol is going to change the culture for the better. He's got a lot of work to do, but
so,
and it's hard changing the DNA of a person, but I think it's going to help improve it.
So the White Sox have historically been a very admired program amongst Cuban players.
Mm-hmm.
And by not bringing back Jose Abreu, does that risk that reputation that the White Sox have and risk their ability to bring international players to the organization because of the whole Jose Abreu situation?
I don't know. I mean, it's such a long history of it, so I don't know if that alone would make really much of an impact. But what I would say is that it's probably helpful that at the very least, even with all this said, that Tony La Russa isn't still there. Because I think if Jose Abreu was staying this stuff and Tony La Russa was still part of the organization, then yeah, I could see that hurting it. But I think if Pedro Grifol really does change the culture here and they play better, I don't think it's going to make as much of an impact. That's just my opinion.
I don't know. I mean, to me, does it make an impact? I don't know. I can't say for certain. But if I'm running an organization, did letting him walk and disrespecting Jose Abreu, is it worth that risk of potentially? I don't think you ruin the Cuban pipeline, but you take away that competitive advantage you had to attract Cuban players. I think that does hamper that in some ways. I probably would have tried to sign him to another team friendly deal. I know it puts you over the amount of money that Jerry's comfortable spending, but at some point, I think you have to weigh what's best for your team going forward. And I don't know if he does. I still think Jerry he's benefiting ownership and their bottom dollar over everything else.
I mean, here's the thing. Like, I think it's more of how they handled Abreu leaving than letting Abreu walk, because I think there was the argument to be made that a 36-year-old first baseman was making it a bit more difficult when you wanted Andrew Vaughn being your next guy and you had a team filled with DHs. I mean, I get the logic of moving on, but, you know, you had him sit out the final game and having him come in and take the fall for it, saying, no, I wanted to sit out, and not giving the fans an opportunity to say goodbye to him. And, you know, he says he felt hurt and disrespected. So however you handled it just clearly wasn't the best way to do it.
I mean, that's a White Sox ham-handed approach to it. So, you know, things happen, choices were made. And to your point, having too many DH/first baseman to go around, because, you know, you have one first baseman spot, one DH spot, and you have guys that could play a corner outfield spot, but are a liability defensively, that are much better offensive players. I agree with that point, but isn't there a way that you go to Jose Abreu and discuss that with him and say, hey, listen, this is the reality of the situation. You know, you're a White Sox player, always a White Sox player. We love you. We want to give you the opportunity to make money and play. We just don't have the room for you and for, you know, the other players that we're going to rotate through the DH spot. I mean, I think that's a much more fair way to do it than, you know, what seemingly Jose Abreu feels happens.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a better way they could have done it. And, you know, we'll never know exactly how it went down behind the scenes, but, you know, clearly it did make an impact on Abreu.
Yeah, I mean, the same thing with Cubs and Wilson Contreras. Like, you know, that guy got strung along for a long time. You know, he kept saying for a while, I haven't heard anything about a contract extension. I would love a contract extension. You know, if you're the Cubs and you know, hey, we're going to move in opposite direction. We're looking, you know, you're an exceptional hitter, and but we're looking to have, you know, a guy with better catching numbers, you know, to help our pitchers out. And we're willing to eat the deficit of offensive ability with that. We would like to trade you. Do you have preference for trade where you would like to go? You know, I think there's a way to explain to players what you're trying to do and not burn those bridges. It would be nice for a player to leave and not just have bad things to say.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Especially if they go to your rival and do it.
Yeah, your biggest rival of over 100 years.
But is there anything else you wanted to talk about?
Nope, I think I've said my piece.
All right, well, I think that's going to do it for this episode of Bill Swirsky Sports Talk Chicago. I want to thank everybody so much for listening. Please hit subscribe however you listen to podcasts, whether it's iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, Google Play, Spotify, etc. Share this podcast with your friends. It's how we grow the show. Follow us on social media at Swirsky Sports, facebook.com/SwirskySports, SwirskySports.com, or facebook.com/SwirskySports, SwirskySports.com, or ShyFamPat2 for Alex on Twitter, or AlexanderJPatCreative.com for all the cool stuff that Alex does. And again, thank you guys so much for listening. And until next time, bear down.
Cubs win! What a lucky break! The good Lord wants the Cubs to win!
We thank Ditka and God for all they have provided.
Cubs win! Cubs win! Cubs win!
Oh, I don't want her, you can have her. She's a Packer fan. She can't fit in my van. And she looks like...
Remember, New Yorkers, smoking crack is not legal on planes.
Bears, 31 to negative 7.
The Bears!
Oh, when the Bears go bearing down...